Welcome to the latest edition of the Bet and Collect podcast here on VegasInsider.com. Kevin Rogers with you as we'll take a look at week 9 of the NFL. We've hit the second half of the season, which is pretty impressive. And before we talk a lot of NFL, very excited for our first guest. He is the host of Follow the Money on VSiN, 7 to 10 a.m., along with Paulie Howard. It's Mitch Moss, and he's joining us here on the Bet and Collect podcast. And Mitch, very excited to have you here. The first thing I wanted to ask you about just your arrival at VSiN. For those who don't know, you worked in radio a long time in Las Vegas. You went to San Francisco for a bit, went back to Vegas. When the opportunity presented itself for VSiN, when it first came up already, it seems like 3 years ago, it's crazy. What were your thoughts about that, about joining an all-sports gambling network?
Well, I had some mixed emotions. First of all, I love the idea. And I told them, because going back, people might forget, but VSiN was created before PASPA was repealed. So the only spot where you could bet legally in the country was, Las Vegas and the state of Nevada. So like a year later or so, they were ahead of the curve with this. They thought of this many, many years ago. Great job getting in front of that. But and I told management that I thought the idea of this could eventually turn into something that is as big as ESPN. Because if you go back to really think about what ESPN was like in the early days, and as a young kid at the time, I would get home from school, I'd turn on ESPN, and like the America's Cup would be on, and I would watch yacht racing. And I had, why would I have any interest whatsoever in yacht racing other than it's on TV? I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. That or billiards or PBA, whatever, just like sports on TV. And ESPN obviously turned into, what it eventually did, and it didn't really take that long. But then you add the dimension of live betting potential or just all talking about gambling. And I thought the idea was going to be an absolute home run. That, obviously on one side. The other side was I worked for a company out here in Las Vegas that was, extremely loyal. And like probably I could, retire there had I wanted to. But I also like taking chances once in a while. Just the ceiling for VSiN was so spectacularly big that I had to take a chance on it. And, fortunately enough, the network has now grown quite a bit over the years. And I still think, the sky is the limit. So mixed at first, but certainly more than happy that I made the move, 3 years ago.
And now you're hosting the morning show with Paulie Howard, and that's 7 to 10 in the morning Eastern time. That means 4 to 7 Pacific, which is an insane time, but you guys pull it off. And just wanted to know, what's your daily routine to be up that early, do the show, and then obviously you have to be rested somehow so you can watch the games later on in the day?
So I wish I had like a set schedule that I could tell you about. Like I come home 8:30, I sleep until like, 2 or 3, and then that's it for me. But I have a really difficult time sleeping during the day. I always have. I had a job one time many, many years ago that was like, I was 20 years old, but I worked 11 p.m. to 11 a.m. 3 days a week. I would have 4 days off, but in theory, those hours would have been great. And I lasted like a month because I couldn't sleep. During the day, and I'd just be tired the entire time, and it sucked. And I said, "Nah, guys, I can't do this anymore." I lasted like literally 30 days. But when I do nap, and I'll give you an example here recently with the on election day, I got home and I'm like, "Oh, I'm a little tired. I'm gonna see if I can fall asleep here." And I did, and I was out for probably a couple of hours, and I was out cold. And then when I snapped out of it, it was still it was light outside. It was like 12:15 out here in the afternoon, and I thought, "Oh my God, I missed the show. It's what is it, like 6 o'clock in the morning. I can't believe I slept that long." I totally panicked, looked at my phone, and I was like, wait a second, 12:50, what? And it turns out I was only out for 2 hours. It felt like I'd been sleeping for 24 hours. I mean, it was just incredible. But so usually I go to bed like after the games are over with, probably around 8:30, 9 o'clock, wake up around 2, check anything I may have missed. But, as I've told people before, that's, during the bubble, NHL, NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball playoffs, World Series, NFL on Monday nights, Thursday nights. Now that the match is going to be back, I'll do that. But if we're talking about like during normal times, and let's say we have, 4 NBA games on a Tuesday or a Thursday and 3 NHL, I'm not staying up until 11 o'clock to watch the West Coast games in the NBA or the NHL. I'll fall asleep before those games are finished, and I'll wake up and I'll check the box scores. I'll do a quick read of what took place in the game, so I kind of have some idea of what I'm talking about. And I'll pay attention to as much as I possibly can before I go to bed during those games. But at some point, I got to tap out for a few hours.
You guys recently moved from the South Point to Circa, and there was a big blowout party at Circa last week. Derek Stevens had a whole bunch of people there, and it looked like a fantastic showing for everyone. And the Circa looks great on television watching you guys there. The Circa, just describe it. Describe what kind of casino and sports book it is there in downtown.
Well, if you've been to downtown Las Vegas before, you are in for quite the, I don't want to say rude awakening, but quite the eye-opening experience, because it is unlike anything downtown Las Vegas has ever seen before. And I've told like Derek Stevens, who owns the casino, and Mike Palm, who comes on our show and is a VP at that casino, like you could have built the Circa Resort Casino any spot in Las Vegas, anywhere on the strip, like right in the middle. You could have put it next to the Bellagio if there was enough land, or by the Wynn or Encore, or even down by like MGM, and it would have fit in with all of them, and it would have held their own and still had advantages over some of those other, you know, huge casinos that attract tourists, you know, so many millions over the years. And I would actually go one further and say you could probably put Circa at any piece of the world and people would be impressed by it. Once you see this sports book, and you know, I've tweeted out videos from it, our show is there every single day with the backdrop behind us, and it looks phenomenal on TV, it looks phenomenal with the videos. But once you see it in person, that and the whole pool area where they have like 145 foot TV screen out by the pool. That's another thing, by the way, like this pool in downtown Las Vegas now not only competes with some of the best pools in Las Vegas on the strip, but probably has the edge over, you know, any of them. But once you see it in person, like I live here, I've been here for 20 years. Once I go there, like I don't want to leave. I can't imagine what it's like if you come here for the first time in a long time, you know, because of the pandemic or whatever, and you visit, you're going to be blown away. Because you have so many different options there. The restaurants are amazing. The pool area, like I said, I have a difficult time thinking like what spot's best to watch the games. And they have so many different areas inside the sports book to watch the game at, but also out by the pool when it's so nice out here in Las Vegas, like you don't know which one is the actual better, you know, where you want to spend more time watching the games. And then you have the way they built it with like, because Derek's a Detroit guy. So he used to go to the old Tiger Stadium to watch the Tigers play Major League Baseball when he was growing up. And that, you know, the porch in right field that overhang the seats below them, that's what he built with his bar area. And now, so you go up there and play video poker and your perfect sight line is like 20 TVs right in front of your face. And it's a dream come true. And I've said this before on the air, and I totally mean it. If you're like, I don't know, like a 25 or a 26 year, whatever age might be, and you come out and visit Las Vegas and you spend a weekend or 3 or 4 days at Circa, I don't know how you're going to want to leave. And I said that as soon as you're going back, like driving back to McCarran to fly out or leave town, I knew the first time I stepped foot in Las Vegas, I wanted to move out here at some point. With Circa, I'd say the same thing. When you leave, you're going to be like, oh my God, I don't want to leave. I got to find a way to move out here. It's that impressive.
Obviously, Mitch, we know that in this business, it's 7 days a week. That even though you're on the air 5 days a week, Saturday and Sundays are football. So you guys have to pay attention to it. What's your football viewing weekend like with the college? You know, basically, I mean, I say noon Eastern, you're 9 a.m. Pacific with the kickoffs all the way through, and then 10 a.m. on Sundays with the NFL. What's your football weekend like to keep on top of everything?
Well, I watch as much as I possibly can. Usually, I will go one of the days to a sports book because I still love being in the middle of that kind of thing. Even though I know we're in different times right now, I love going to Circa. I've gone to the Westgate a zillion times over the years for college or the NFL. Love the Westgate, great sports book. You know, the South Point where we were at a couple of weeks ago before, we were there for like 3 years before we moved to the Circa 2 weeks ago. That's a fun spot to watch games. So I try to make it out to a book one day a week. And that might rotate. Do I go Saturday? Do I go Sunday? I kind of make that decision a little bit later on in the week. And then the other day I'll spend with, you know, just a couple TVs at the house, 3 TVs set up, phone to track scores, probably the laptop out to watch another game if I can. And then I'll just have, you know, going bouncing back between as many games as possible. And like, for example, last week during college, that was the Clemson game against Boston College that weekend. Just had 3 TVs on beginning at 9 o'clock. Actually, I was watching game day probably at 6:30 in the morning. I think they were on at 6:30 in the morning because I was up. I still wake up early on the weekends. And then I watched until, I mean, the late games were probably at halftime. And it was Halloween. And so, you know, I do have a wife at home. And at some point we were just discussing, she's like, okay, you've been doing this all day again. Can we maybe like watch a scary movie or something on Halloween? And I said, yeah, of course, we'll put on a movie. So we did. So, but I try to take in, you know, from start to finish, like this weekend coming up, late games now. So basically it's 9 o'clock in the morning until maybe midnight.
Now, a couple of years ago, we saw Las Vegas get the Golden Knights, and over the years, expansion teams really don't do much for a few years, but the Golden Knights were just such an anomaly of what they did to go to the Stanley Cup in their first season. And it's always an experience at their games at T-Mobile. Now you have the Raiders in town, and it's just so different because you built this new stadium and no one can go to it, which is so terrible. But what's it been like with the Raiders now in Las Vegas?
I really wish that for a million different reasons, obviously the pandemic never would have hit, obviously, like anybody else in the country and in the world, because I wanted to see what that stadium was going to look like. What was that, week two on a Monday night when they hosted the Saints and they won the game? A couple of weeks ago when they took on Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, I think the place would have absolutely been on fire. And now you have, the weird thing is that people in town, and now I think the population is like, 2.2, 2.3 million, whatever it is, something like that. But not a lot of people are born and raised in Las Vegas. And even the ones that are, for the people who love football, they always would like gravitate towards a team. Or people have moved here from, like me, the Midwest, the Northeast, somewhere in the South, whatever, California, and you already root for the Bears or the Packers or the Steelers, Dolphins, you get my point. So you come here and you already have that team, but pretty much every single other person that I've met, unless they're like a Broncos fan or a Chiefs fan, they have said they're going to be like my, second team that I root for. So they're going to root for a team like the Eagles or a team like, the 49ers. And dare I say the 49ers, because they were also in the Bay Area. But I've heard people say that, yeah, they're going to be my second favorite team now that I live here in Las Vegas. And in like some of the sports books, the Westgate, for example, a couple of weeks ago when the Raiders, they came back and I'm forgetting who they beat, place went absolutely nuts when they won the game. So you see all these locals that are coming out to like sports books, sports bars, whatever, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic still. And they absolutely love it. And you see, you know, in shopping malls, plazas, whatever, there are so many like different Raiders stores that have been built up. But it's tough to really gauge it just because we can't have any fans at the stadium. So it's a little, it's just so bizarre.
You're very active on Twitter, Mitch, and gambling Twitter, like we call it, it's blown up so much over the last year and a half, 2 years with all the legalization all around the country and all the different states now that you can gamble in. It feels like, in a sense, that I hate to use this term, but everyone's an expert. Now, everyone has an opinion. You have all these shows out there. And what do you think about that, where for a while it felt like it was hours? You worked in Vegas a long time before VSiN, so you were around the scene, that it was almost like on the surface, just hours. Now everyone has an opinion on sports gambling.
It is a little strange, isn't it? I mean, to see everybody come out of the woodwork like this. What about you? I mean, you've also done this for a long time, and you've covered the gambling scene for a while. What do you think about it when you see now all of a sudden it never really did exist too much? I mean, if you follow the right people, sure, you're going to get it. But now it's just like it has blown up like wildfire, and it's only getting bigger every single day. I don't personally like gambling Twitter. But, I mean, there's not really overall a lot to love about that anyway. In fact, I think the only thing maybe worse might be political Twitter. There's no way you can deal with it for more than 3 minutes, in my opinion anyway. But I don't like politics anyway. So a gambling Twitter can be, it's a little odd. Because people that you don't know who they are. What I don't like is the people who never put their name on something. Like, it's all these accounts where I don't know what that handle means. They don't put a picture up. I don't know who you are. I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know anything about you. So what am I supposed to think about that? That's another thing that just is weird. What do you think about it?
I mean, what I don't like about it, Mitch, is that first of all, I don't like when people get so propped up. They won one game. Okay, so you took the Giants against the Bucks. Great. Okay, so you won one game. That it's always the long term and not the short term. But it just feels like there's always people that are looking to bash someone if they have an opinion on something and they're wrong. Yes. You're going to be wrong. You know this. If you miss 40% of the time in gambling, you're a millionaire. So you're going to win every. You know what I'm saying? So it's a crazy thing. But also, I don't like all the opinions too, especially with the NFL. It's just too much. When I see all these people have opinions, I'm like, I don't know if I like this game now because John XXX likes this game on Twitter, and it's just, I don't really know. So I think it's just too much information. That's what it is. And too many opinions, I think, kind of hurts it.
That's why, you got to be really careful with this kind of stuff. And I will tell people that all the time. If you go just based on our network alone, for example, like starting with our show, and now that we're back to like 18 hours every single day, you might hear five hosts along with three different guests in one day, and they have split opinions on the game. So like, and that's only one spot, and there's so much content now available. You're right, with Twitter, online stuff, there's countless areas where you can get content and opinions on this kind of thing. But if you go and read up on games and focus on like, for example, the Thursday night game this week between the Packers and the 49ers, you in a half an hour, you might be completely split between like 16 different opinions. So I don't know, what are you supposed to do with that? I mean, you stay away, but you could probably find that for every single example, for every single game every week. But you're right. It does bother me that people also like the thick skin, people who don't have thick skin overall, is kind of, it's weak to me. But the people who also are not, you can't be afraid to admit that you're wrong. So it bothers me when people basically create this facade that I'm right again. You know me, I get it right every single time. No, you don't. Like you said, if you miss on 40% of your bets, you're going to be a millionaire and you can retire at whatever age you want to, basically. So if, with the good comes the bad. So we need to hear about that as well if you're going to brag about your winning picks.
I want to talk about the election for a second because you guys mentioned it on Wednesday's show because it wasn't decided Tuesday night. And we know we can't bet on it in the States, that it's only offshore. And on Tuesday night, you saw Biden open as the favorite. Then Trump all of a sudden was like the overwhelming favorite. And then overnight, Biden was the favorite again. And, as of Wednesday, it's still up in the air. But I guess the whole, you want to call it in-game politics, the betting, that's just insane what happened with this.
I couldn't get enough of it either. If you go back to 2016, like, I don't think Tuesday made a lot of sense with the betting, the way like the results were pouring in on different networks, right? In 2016, when Trump was about to take down Florida, Hillary got to minus $15 offshore book. And I'm like, wait a second here. There's something wrong with this. Why are they taking a stand? Are they taking that much handle right now on Hillary? Because people are not reading this correctly. And I think if Trump's going to take Florida, he's got a great shot to win. Those odds never made sense. Now fast forward to 2020. And what was really responsible for Trump moving all the way up to a $5 favorite, then a $6 favorite, then seven. Then I think one book had minus 775. Is that because the Miami-Dade County results were coming in and people just assumed that, oh my God, this is going to be a trend that's going to trickle past Florida and affect like pretty much every other state where it's going to be close? So I got to hammer Donald Trump. Was that actual odds makers thinking that to themselves? Like, okay, we better start moving this because if he's going to take Florida like this, we better get ahead of the curve here, make him a huge favorite. Was it a combination? Was it the fact that people who have backed Trump since 2016 would bet him at any price? I think that might have been in it as something to do with it as well. And I've also seen people opine about this who I would trust, who have experience in the offshore world, who have worked elections multiple times. And they said they've never seen people who they respect this much blow it by betting a lot of money with their hearts and not their head. So they got too emotionally invested in what was taking place. But again, now this goes back, this is back-to-back elections where if you have outs and you're tracking this stuff in play, you could grab massive numbers on both sides to absolutely lock in a huge profit no matter what happens. Because in a span of one evening, you could have gotten Biden at, what was the highest where he was at, plus $4.50, plus $5 maybe in some spots, to where that flipped hours later, and he was then a $5 favorite, and Trump on the flip side could have been, $3 or more at certain books. Just a wild roller coaster with it, and I love tracking it. I thought it was great. It almost makes me look forward to 2024. I want to see it again.
Going back a few months, Mitch, with the pandemic when it first began and sports shut down, and it was tough for all of us. I mean, I remember you guys, had you have content? You don't have sports going on for a while, so you guys had to find a way to get through it. Which sports did you enjoy following when the pandemic started before we ended up getting back to somewhat normal in July?
Well, two definitely stood out to me. I'm not going to include Russian ping pong because that was dicey at best. And I know a couple of guys personally who really got into it. They actually changed their lifestyle to where they would stay up all night long and watch and bet on this stuff. Then they would sleep during the day. And that's because it was pretty much one of the only things going on. There was a situation where I bet on one of the ping pong guys, table tennis players, and the book where I bet it was a legal sports book taking the action, compared to his actual real name, like the last name was spelled differently by like three different letters. And I said, that'll do it for me. And I lost the bet. I'm like, I'm going to tap out. What am I doing betting on this stuff? I did not force it with Korean baseball. I know a lot of people got involved in that big time. And I say force it because that would have been me completely forcing it. Other people didn't. I mean, they studied it, they watched it, they bet on it, so they weren't forcing it. I always have liked golf and I've liked betting on golf, but I have a new, it's a new passion actually, and a new respect for people who have actually been betting golf for a long time and for the golfers individually anyway. I love it. I love the markets that are available, the outrights. I don't do a lot of matchups because I'm not great at them. I will bet other people's opinions with the matchups, but I love like the top 10s, top 20s, even all the way to the top 40s. I love the in-play with golf. I think it's fantastic. And also, I think maybe one of the reasons why I like it so much is because during the pandemic, when we didn't have games going on, you know, other than golf and the UFC, that's another one that I really fell in love with for like the second time in my life. But I paid attention to the numbers that were available in the majors, right? In the US Open, in the PGA, in the Masters. And so when these guys were playing really well back in June and July, I wanted to pay attention to those markets. And I found what I think are some really terrific numbers. And I'm set up. I think I have some unreal numbers actually with guys in the Masters. If they can, you know, hang in there and be close on Sunday, I can get involved in, with in-play and probably lock in a profit. But the golf has just been amazing. And we have the field right now. It's just so good. I mean, my God, it's gotten so much better over the last 10, 15 years than where it was. So that's definitely sport number one for me. The second one was UFC. And I said I fell in love with it for the second time because I used to go to many of the UFC events in the early to mid-2000s out here in Las Vegas. I went to a lot of them. Then when they started having cards like every, you know, once a month, and then it was like almost like once a week, it was a little bit too much. I never had the capacity in my brain to pay attention to much or keep going to the events. Then I picked it back up during the restart in the pandemic. And I love that from many different angles, one in which was the in-play with the live wagering, where you could find, you could be watching the fight and the favorite might be minus $20. Like you think he's won all three rounds and it's easily decided once, but you can't trust the judges. So in like close fights where the odds might've been $20 for one guy, and you're thinking to yourself, wait a second here. I've lived through the MMA and boxing enough in my world to think that judges might see it a different way. You could take $9, $10 on the dog just in case. And it happened like almost every single card where the judges were completely off from what the in-game live odds were. And I actually trusted the odds a little bit more, but I said, just in case here, I want to bet the other side. And so the UFC and the cards never, they always delivered. They never failed for the most part. So I would say golf and UFC for short answer long here as I carry on for 11 minutes with this answer. But those two sports definitely stood out more than any others.
What's your favorite sport to gamble on, your least favorite sport to gamble on?
Regular season NBA is my least favorite. I did like it during the bubble quite a bit. That was probably the best NBA betting experience I had in a long, long time. But during the regular season, I'm not good at it whatsoever. And then I would say my favorite would be college basketball, certainly March Madness, but that's only, you know, for a couple of weeks. But I'd say the regular season in college basketball and college football. I used to love the NFL, but the NFL is just, it's so, I mean, if you can beat that sport every single year, you are awesome. And I would tip my cap to anybody that can, but if you can hit 56, 58, 60% somehow in the NFL every year, that's amazing. And I can't do it. It's a very difficult sport to beat. But when I first moved out here, it was the NFL.
Finally, Mitch, the NFL, we haven't had, we haven't lost games yet. There's been games that have been moved around. But we haven't lost games yet. College football, we have lost a lot of games, but also there's more teams. So it's just going to happen. And kids are on campus and we've seen the COVID spread. You're from Wisconsin originally. The Badgers, they've had their issues. Now they've lost two games. I say lost two games. They haven't played two games. They had their game this week also canceled. What are your thoughts on that with the Badgers? And now that they don't have, they're losing out on these games, they could end up be playing six or seven games and who knows, maybe less at this point.
Well, I mean, for the time outside of Russell Wilson in my lifetime watching the Badgers, I actually got excited about watching their quarterback play. This Mertz kid who turned down a lot of other Power Five teams. He was very highly recruited. Like the Badgers don't recruit, they don't land four-star prospects. You know what I'm saying? A quarterback. They do in other areas, but quarterback, come on. Like the whole thing with Wisconsin has been, other than the year they had Russell Wilson, is can you imagine if this team had a quarterback? And we see him come out and play the first game against Illinois. I mean, my phone, you should have seen my phone that night on the Friday night. Friends, family, whatever, texting. Like, we haven't seen, when's like, really? Jack Cohn? He can never play ever again as far as, and I'm like, I totally agree. I mean, look at this. In one game, what he did. And then to have this just like, and then it's not only him, but then Cohn's injured. The third string kid had COVID. And you go from, you know, potentially being the best team again, certainly the favorites, I think, on the western side of that conference to come out of there and probably play Ohio State again. Not that they could beat Ohio State, but it sucks. You know, it does. I mean, because they were going to have a good defense again. not going to overreact from one game and tell you the running game was going to be garbage all year long, but it didn't look, you know, looked like they were going to miss certainly Jonathan Taylor this year. But and if they miss one more game, that's it. Like, they're not going to be eligible to play for the Big Ten championship. And it just happens to be the one team that I still care about in sports being from there. I've always been a Badger fan, but, and college football has been my favorite sport for probably 10 or 15 years now. It actually surpassed college basketball years ago, especially now that we have a playoff, but not that they were going to come out and play for it anyway, because I don't think they'd get by Ohio State, but it's, you know, and it's like all of a sudden, really, we got to wait for next year already. We waited this long to get college football back, and now the one team that I actually care about, here you go, they're probably not going to be able to finish the season at all.
Mitch Moss hosts Follow the Money on VSiN. You can find it 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, and VSiN has really exploded the last few years, and Mitch and Pauly do a great job on the morning show, and Mitch joining us here on the Bet and Collect podcast. Mitch, thanks so much for the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Kevin. Thanks for having me.